I'd like to call the February 19th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees to order, and and advise the public that we apologize for being late. And in closed session tonight, we discussed labor negotiations with our representative, and there will be further negotiations during a process that's now undergoing. The first item to be discussed is the consensus on the order of business, and I had a recommendation to make, if the board is comfortable with this, that to accommodate, I believe, Mr. Schempf, who's the manager for the Los Osos 6, will appear before item number 1 on the report section. Next, the board would take into consideration the minutes from our meeting of February 5th, and after we've had a moment, I would like to hear a motion and a second.
I'll move approval of the minutes of February 8th, 2008.
We have a motion from Mr. Unger. Is there a second? I have a second from Ms. Dickinson. Any comments?
I'm sorry. I thought it was February 5th.
Yeah, February 5th. It is February 5th. That's what I said. I don't know. Yeah, we'll move it to February 5th. Any comments or any discussion, Mark?
If I could, Mr. Chairman, on the item on board member reports, I want to be very careful not to get Mr. Parker backed into a corner. It was my intent, and I may have misspoke, to thank him for working on some suggestions, and we do have a biodiesel bus right now that's out there, and hopefully will lead to more of those. But at this time, the district is not considering purchasing electric maintenance vehicles. It is looking into the viability of electric maintenance.
And then there's also one other matter on page 5 under item 6. Regarding the PE exemption, I have to apologize to the board and the public, but I made a mistake at that meeting and didn't realize it till later, and Mr. Buckman also discussed it with me. There was a motion made by Mr. Millar regarding the agenda item, and there was also tonight, I think we're going to rectify that by bringing up that item on an advance agenda, and I apologize because I had that kind of backwards. So that would the only thing that should be said is that the amended agenda item on the PE exemption that's going to be brought up on the advanced agenda should have been voted upon before we did the main motion last time. Does that make sense?
It doesn't have to be the person making the motion.
No. I understand the correction you're making, but I don't know that that's really a correction to the minutes.
That's true. It probably isn't. It's probably just a correction to my mental well-being regarding that. Thank you.
Confession.
And also confession. Yes. So we have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Ms. Dickinson. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So the minutes for February 5th are approved.
I sure would like to see the source authority for that.
I'll pull it out of that Roberts rules. And then we're now into the correspondence section. And I think we had one item of correspondence that was received from McKenna Correa from the Pacific Beach Tower, and that's in the tonight's agenda package. And Mr. Unger?
I would just like to point out that McKenna Correa is one of our students at Morrowbie High School. I believe she's a senior and also one of their top golfers. So thank you, McKenna.
Any other items, Ms. Dickinson?
Correspondence?
Yeah.
I was glad to see that letter, too, on solar energy. I just wanted to education. The correspondence addressed to individual board members is distributed to the addressee and opened by the district personnel. But does that mean that we can't mention it as correspondence? I just thought it was kind of interesting, like our student's letter, which was beautifully done, though, is to whom it may concern, and this one is dear board member. I mean, I think it's sort of a technicality. If if they take the time to find out the board members' names and give you each a letter, it's no longer official. I think it's a little odd, and I just think this should be mentioned as correspondence to the board.
I think that's fine. Any comments about that? Okay. Before we move into reports, or before we go into item number 6 on public comment, I wanted to recognize the 7 students that are in the audience tonight as the camera pans over. They're from Cal Poly, working on senior projects with the College of Liberal Arts. And guest tonight, welcome to the board.
Doesn't that set an attendance record for us tonight, Mr. President?
We want to thank you for putting us over the top for the year. Thanks, Mr. Millar. And before we go into item number 6, is there anybody that wants to address the board in the public comment section? Seeing none, and according to the order of consensus and the order of business, we're going to discuss item number 6, which is the Los Osos Middle School use of groundwater for irrigation purposes. And I don't know if Dr. Valentine or Mr. Parker is going to start that discussion. Dr. Valentine? On the
Mr. Parker has prepared some excellent background information for the board's discussion. One of the things that we wanted to do was to let the water purveyors in Los Osos know about the fact that this discussion was going to take place and to give the water purveyors an opportunity to come to the board and participate in that discussion. Today, we received correspondence, and John, you may have which water purveyor was being represented, but anyway, the notice was that one of our community water purveyors was unable to attend this meeting and asked if the board might consider continuing the discussion to another meeting. We've talked with our legal advisors and amongst ourselves as a staff, and there doesn't appear to be any big downside to waiting for a month to have that discussion. That was the opinion both of our legal advisor and also of our staff who deals with those issues. So we present that as an option. If the board wishes to continue that discussion to a later time, they certainly may, or if the board wishes to conduct the discussion at this time, we're prepared to do so.
Okay. So I'll open it up to the board for any comments or discussions regarding what Dr. Valentine said in the item number 6.
I wouldn't Chris? Be opposed to waiting until the 18th. I do recognize we have somebody from the CSD here, and I'm wondering if they would like to have comment at this time, whether or not we delay this item.
Okay. Just in light of the current budget situation, is $130,000 upfront money something that would be of a concern to the district, or is that recouped so quickly that it's not?
The answer to your question is, as we sit here today, it probably is not a significant issue to us. However, we don't know all of the aspects of the state's approach to solving its budget crisis and how it might impact basic aid districts. So I don't have a definitive answer to you, but I will say that an investment of money for this particular purpose will present us with long-term benefits financially that I would recommend that this is a issue that we should take a serious look at in terms of what that cost saving is going to be in the long term.
And that's in conjunction, Mr. Miller, with the other issue regarding the environmental basis for using non-potable water.
I think that is a significant community and green issue that we should absolutely explore.
Any other questions, comments? I don't know if we have to do a motion to, I guess we do because it's agenda item. So I think the motion, do you want to make that motion, Chris? Yeah. To move it to the agenda on March 18th.
Yeah. Okay, I move that we continue item number 6, Los Osos Middle School use of groundwater for irrigation purposes, to the meeting of March 18th.
Do I have a second? A second by Mark Buckman. All in favor? First, before we do the vote, any other comments or discussion? Buckman to move agenda item number 6 to the March 18th, 2008 board meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0. Now we'll go into the report section of the meeting, and we'll begin with school staff, administrators, or board members, in not in any particular order. Mr. Millar?
How did reports by board members end up being the number one item on the agenda? It used to be like the number 12 item on the agenda. I was absent, yeah. There would have been a lot more discussion had I not been absent, because, frankly, I would much prefer to take care of the district's business before I have to, before I'm entertained by my colleagues' reports. But anyway.
Well, you know, there was no specific mention of any particular board member, but I think the comment was that it was duplicative, that there is time at the beginning of the meeting and time at the end of the meeting, so it was just to consolidate it. But I think the board's willing to consider returning to the other status, if that is its sense.
I thought we saved time at the end of the meeting for Mr. Millar's report.
I'm making sure it's one from anybody.
But I think what we can do is we can go ahead and approach the agenda as it is tonight with these reports, and then if we need to change it, we can talk about that and change it back to the other status that we did have. So are there any staff, administrators, or board members? I have two things. There's Catherine who's going to go ahead, Catherine, if you'd like.
I just have to remind everyone that this Sunday is the Save the Music in Our Schools concert Sunday at the PAC. It's for San Luis High School Vocal Arts and Band and Morro Bay High School Vocal Arts.
Because I did that once a long time ago, and Kathy did TV.
Screenwriter.
The thing that was most heartening was the level of questions that the students asked were just way up there, and it made me really proud to be part of the district. Real quickly, on the 28th of this month is the PTA Founders Day dinner, and we have just found out that Julian Crocker's wife, Donna Crocker, will actually recreate Phoebe Hearst and her thoughts regarding the formation of PTA, and I don't know if a lot of you know that Phoebe Hearst was one of three women who actually started the PTA. And so let me know if you want to know more details.
Okay, thanks, Mark. Chris?
Just a couple of things. I'd like to remind everybody that the Monarch Grove School Exploratorium is this Saturday, the 23rd. I didn't get a time, but people can call the school. That number is 534-2844. It's a great thing. They open up the multipurpose room and have all kinds of neat things for kids to do and adults to see. And then, Catherine, I'm glad the writer's strike was settled before you went over to Los Osos Middle School. That could have been terribly embarrassing. The Tri-Counties Education Coalition is having a meeting this coming Friday at 10 o'clock at the Goleta School Board offices. I'm not sure the address. But we'll be featuring David Sanchez, who's the president of CTA, as the speaker, and we welcome David. Dr. Valentine and I will be going down, and following that, there'll be a 12 o'clock, I believe, press conference discussing the possible effects of the governor's proposed budget cuts. And Jerry is the superintendent of the Hueneme Elementary School District that experienced the shooting last week of the student in class. It was a terrible situation in that school. And I was wondering if we could perhaps send a letter of support or sympathy to the community or to the school district about that terrible incident, and just recognize them for the difficult time that they're having, and hope for the healing of their community.
That sounds like a great idea and a thought. Walt?
I just wanted to say I am going to attend the WASC accreditation meeting on the 24th, so we can divvy up the assignments for things. I'm sure we'll be well represented at Save the Music, so I'll do that. And I just wanted to take a couple of minutes to talk about Pacific Beach's mock trial team, which did so well in competition. They went to the semifinals, seeded number 2. And Chelsea Connor, who was the student representative last board meeting, scored 2 perfect scores, one of which was the, hope I'm not mixing this up, There were a lot of nights of competition. Was the prosecution opening statement, which she did completely from memory and was just amazing. I've seen really experienced trial lawyers, myself included, bumble things. John knows what I mean. But she was just amazing and also received a perfect score for, I believe, a direct examination of one of the Templeton witnesses. The Hannah Johnson, who is our usual representative, did a fantastic job. I believe she got one person. Very hard for the prosecution team to get a conviction, but we did. Our defense team got an acquittal, and our pretrial attorneys won their motion. The defense argues it one way, and the prosecution argues it another way, but we won both ends of that argument. Being seated number two, we went up against Templeton the first night, and they ultimately, I believe, were the winners. Yeah, and they won last year, too. And they beat us by 3 points. And it was... And a lot of kids did a great job. Tim Medakovich, a little shout-out for Tim. And Hannah, Chelsea, and Andrew... I'm going to be so mad at myself in the morning. I'm drawing a blank. They got individual awards. Andrew was a prosecution expert witness, did a fantastic job. And it was, as always, with the PB mock trial team, we only had two students who participated last year. Kayla Brown did a great job, and we'll have two students coming back next year. The other teams that we're up against have 3-4 year students. Some of them even have a couple of years in middle school, and then they come to the high school. So what our team accomplished was really amazing. The neatest thing about it is they continue to be these really terrific, unique young adults who just take to this competition and do such a great job, but they never lose that unique individuality that they bring to it, and they take such good care of each other. It was a really neat thing to see again this year. And I just wanted to let everybody know, and I'm sorry I took so much time of board reports. I take it all back.
Oh, you're forgiven. Thank you, Walt, very much. And Marilyn?
Room. That it just felt so real that it was exciting. And sometimes I was holding my breath. I thought they did a fabulous job. Both teams did a fabulous job. Pacific Beach, of course, has my heart. And I appreciate all the hard work that went into it. And I, of course, want to thank Walt Millar for being their coach and helping them to excel once again.
Thank you, Marilyn. That's very kind. Season. We should also mention Jennifer Alton, too.
I didn't know her name. She was the blonde attorney that was also there.
Right. She also coached last year, and I think maybe the year before that, too. But she's a criminal defense attorney and really did a lot of really great things.
Well, I do also thank her. And then for myself, I won't be attending Save the Music, but I will be attending the WASC accreditation committee at Pacific Beach on Sunday, and that is open, as I understand it, to students, parents, members of the public who are interested in, community members who are interested in coming by Pacific Beach and taking a look as the WASC team goes through. So that's the end of my report.
Thanks, Thank you. Marilyn. Just a quick note, and I think I have this day right. I believe March 1st is the Teach Foundation Telethon, and I think that you can go to their website and obtain information. And everyone knows, I'm pretty sure, but the Teach Foundation raises funds and provides that those monies to the schools within our district to help with programs in the classroom and in many, many ways. So public education, and I spoke with someone who represented homeschooling and someone who represented a magnet-type school up in Atascadero, and it was a lively discussion with, I think, 30 or 40 Chamber of Commerce members who were part of a leadership class, and it was a good discussion on public education. Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, first of all, that I send all of my best and consider myself very much a supporter of the music programs in our schools and the Save the Music concert at the PAC. And I've been in past years almost religiously. This year, because of the Pacific Beach accreditation, I'm really looking forward to meeting the accreditation team at Pacific Beach, which would make it not possible to attend the Save the Music, so I wanted to send my best.
Thank you.
I'm going to the Save the Music. I'll be at Save the Music.
Okay. I'll be somewhere, but I'm not going to tell you now. Okay. Any other comments or reports? Okay. And then let's go into Mr. Miller, the status of the state budget.
Thank you, Mr. President. Under the terms of recently enacted Proposition 58, the governor is allowed to declare a fiscal crisis and require that the legislature pass corrective action within 45 days. And as of last Friday, the legislature completed its task and put together a series of bills designed to reduce the state deficit from its current anticipated level of $14.5 billion, which I think tomorrow when you hear the legislative act, nothing to do with 08-09, in which the yeoman's amount of work really has to be done, because it's in this year that they have enacted $500 million worth of cuts to Prop 98, but they pay for it by sweeping up what they call reversion accounts, which are appropriations made but never delivered to school districts. And they have a significant amount of that, and I'm going to say $450 million. They happen to be $50 million short of the reversion money in order to pay for that cut to Prop 98, but they have designed a process that will be painless to school districts in order for that to happen. The second piece of that whole process is that they're taking $400+ million from the state transportation fund and transferring it to the general fund of the state to pay for home-to-school transportation costs. The reason we're interested in that is because potentially that could have been a reduction to Prop 98, but the method that they worked out makes it a non-impact on Prop 98. So we're happy to see that part of it. And finally, there is a two-month delay of appropriations to revenue limit districts in July until September of $1.1 billion. What that does is twofold. Saves the state from running out of money, particularly in the view that they probably won't have a budget passed by then, so they won't have authority to spend the money anyway. Close to zero balances in their bank accounts every month, and there are an increasing number of those. And 08-09 is going to be a particularly painful year for a lot of school districts. Those are the three significant issues in education that were part of the package sent to the governor on Friday. Fully expect him to sign whatever they sent him. And that will resolve, quote unquote, the current year budget crisis at the state level. It does not nearly address the need for a tough, hard look at the 08-09 state budget and what that's going to mean to education. One of the impacts that has got education reeling at the moment is that if you do a multi-year projection, as is required under AB 1200, and your second interim reports, as we are going to see at our next board meeting, you'll see our second interim, you'll have a multi-year. If you don't have the ability to meet your financial obligations in the current year or the two out years, then you are either a qualified or a negative termed school district. If you're qualified or negative, your borrowing ability is either altered dramatically in a very painful way or inhibited into the future. Example, many districts use certificates of participation notes in order to finance building projects. Those certificates of participation, also known as COPs, have clauses in them many times, which says if you don't maintain a positive rating, your note is 400 of which will be termed negative or qualified if they don't get their COLAs for next year. There are 1,000 school districts in the state of California. 40% of them will go qualified or negative. This is a huge issue for many, many school districts and for education in general if, in fact, the cuts are so bad as to push school districts into a fiscal crisis of this nature. So we continue to watch it as education. We have no concept of what the impact on basic aid is going to be at this time, and the spectrum is as big as your imagination of what could happen to basic aid school districts once the 08-09 budget is discussed in detail. So we'll have to stay tuned for that piece.
Marilyn had a question.
Thank you. Russell, I had two questions. For ourselves, bridging June and July will not be a problem?
It will not, because we have significant money in other funds. We have money in our building fund. We have money in our prop, in our other Measure A monies and stuff that are left over, that should we run short in our general fund, we could borrow from the cafeteria fund or any of the other funds that we have.
Okay, so we'll be okay there. And then with regard to these reversion dollars,
yes,
I'm assuming that we have not spent any money that we anticipated to receive but did not receive.
But let me be clear. That's not exactly what they're talking about with the reversion money at this moment. And they make an estimate of how much they're going to have to send to school districts. And invariably, they overestimate because of two significant things. One is declining enrollment throughout the state, mm-hmm. and declining enrollment within K-3. And then school districts opt out of K-3, either the whole program or kindergarten or third grade, because of the encroachment costs of keeping it alive. So the money that they opt out that they would have received stays with the state. That, in fact, is the definition of reversion. Money expected to be spent but kept. And so when we talk about our VAPA money or the counseling money, all the money that we were promised but not given, we expect that now that we have an appropriations letter that we're going to get that money. And, in fact, we will anticipate getting that money without budgeting it. We will only budget that particular money when the green money is actually received. But on this particular piece about the state budget, clearly it's about money appropriated but never spent or promised to districts in the past.
Okay? I see. Thank you.
Yep.
Adrian?
I read the article in the Tribune about this, and they talked about not only education being cut, but 10% cuts to doctors who treat patients with Medi-Cal and that
yes.
type of thing. But they mentioned that the Republicans did a good job of protecting the sales tax on luxury yachts and things like that. Those are not going to be affected.
So that's
correct. Those guys are safe.
So if you want to buy a yacht, go ahead. You don't have to pay the sales tax now.
California.
Yeah, as long as you don't bring it to California for 30 days, then you're all right.
Have to stay in Mexico for another month.
But people pay attention to that. Any cuts in special education will clearly hurt our students and devastate our school district.
You know, that brings up, I don't want to pass this by. Special education is a huge encroachment to the district. The federal requirement is that we have a maintenance of effort that requires us, by law, to maintain the same level of expenditures in this current year, next year, as we do have in this current year. What that means is even if we don't receive the money from the feds or the state, in which case the honest truth is we're taking cuts in both, we still have to make the expenditure. So what Chris is talking about, the triple cut, is the loss of funding from the state, $189 million for basic funding for special ed, plus $25 million for home-to-school transportation. The school agencies will be required to backfill this loss because of the maintenance of effort requirement. And more than likely, the feds are going to cut their funding by $278 million because the state didn't maintain its maintenance of effort, which it's also required to do. So the action by the state in the special ed arena is going to end up costing districts not once, not twice, but three different times in significant amounts of money. And as we all know, special education is not a declining enrollment issue. It's not a declining need issue. It is, in fact, one of our fastest growing population and dollar cost items of our budget as we look at our budget for 08-09.
Okay. Thank you, Russell. Questions, other comments? Thanks very much for that.
Staff had not planned to bring this project to the board at this time. However, recent events, or perhaps I should say non-events at the federal legislature, created a window of opportunity that we thought we should sunshine with the board rather than just let it go by and not have any option to proceed with a PV project. And so I wanted to spell out that situation. In previous correspondence with the board, I had indicated that trying to make a solar photovoltaic project pencil out is very difficult, and to have it not cost the school district anything almost required that we enter into what's called a power purchase agreement with a third party, a private party, which could take advantage of tax credits, depreciation, et cetera, which the public agency is not capable of taking advantage of. I mean, it's not offered to us. The tax credits, the federal tax credits, which amount to approximately 30% of a project cost, are going to sunset December of 08. There had been a lot of legislative action and lobbying to try and extend the tax credits for renewable energy projects, but it's not looking very favorable now with the failure of the most recent attempt. Therefore, we have this very short window of opportunity should the board decide that we wanted to proceed with a proposal to get one actually. First of all, we'd have to negotiate a contract. We'd have to execute the contract. We'd have to complete the design work, the approvals through DSA. The purchase of power provided by a third party's installation on school district property. The third party would design, build, approve, operate, maintain, finance the entire installation. That's the road I was going down in trying to get feasibility studies from various companies so that we really had something to compare and contrast. I got another response from some of my inquiries just last week after this item was written. So we've actually gotten three responses from companies who do these types of large installations. And we're talking about capital expenditure for the third party now of between $10 and $20 million for the school district. I mean, these are big-time construction projects. And every company looks at it a little differently. And it's interesting that government code section, I think I quoted in here, 4217, allows public agencies to not go to public bid, but to negotiate directly with an energy service providing company for a project like this. And that's designed to try and streamline the process so that public agencies can get into this sort of an activity easier than trying to put together a set of specifications and put it out to public bid, et cetera. So there are some advantages and disadvantages. I think it's generally an advantage to do something like this because otherwise we would be looking at trying to finance $10 to $20 million in order to realize the type of energy generation from a photovoltaic project that we're talking about here. Going down parallel tracks, if we went with them, if the board chose to go with them and go with a project, where they would go ahead and do their detailed engineering study at the same time that they work their design and approval process, thereby picking up what would normally be linear on the time schedule, an overlap, and they believe that they could do an installation and get it completed by December of 08. Now, they say they would take all the responsibility and all the liability. We haven't had a chance yet to look at the contracts to verify that, to have our attorney look at it. There are a whole lot of things that are moving very quickly if we were going to move forward and try and make this sort of a time frame. I've indicated in my write-up some of the concerns that staff has about trying to move a project of this magnitude this quickly. We're concerned that we We don't have even more comparison feasibility studies with an opportunity to really put together an evaluation grid and compare different proposals, because every company looks at it a little differently. We're concerned that of the short time frame, the potential that there would be negative impacts to students and staff, because we might have to close off half of a parking lot, close down access around the building. It would be like going into a building program, and so staff is always inconvenienced when that happens, and we would not have the luxury of saying we're going to target our major work just during non-school days in the summer. I mean, we simply wouldn't have that luxury. We're also concerned there would be numerous decisions that would have to be made in a very rapid fashion, potentially hastily. You know, just realistically, it's very, very quick. We do believe there will most likely be opportunities in the future that there's a possibility that they will extend the federal tax credits even before it sunsets in December, although it's looking that possibility is looking dimmer and dimmer. It still could happen, and it's also possible that, you know, the new administration will implement other programs that make a project like this economically feasible for the school district. And I guess another thing to mention is that the annual projected savings to the school district are not really huge. I mean, it's difficult to get these to even break even by using a third party and a power purchase agreement and all of the tax benefits the third party is able to attach. So we thought it was important to get it before the board so that you could have the discussion, give staff direction or consider it or ask us to bring back more information, whatever you'd like to do. But because the window appears to be closing, we needed to get it to you.
Okay, thank you. And I was going to say before Dr. Valentine and questions for Brad, just to let everybody on the board know, we do have a member of the public that wants to speak to this item probably after questions or discussions with Mr. Parker, and then Mr. Aldrich can come up and have the presentation. So Dr. Valentine, then Mr. Millar, then Wall.
Recently, it came to our attention that the possibility of the tax credits may be sunsetting in December, and that if we were to do a photovoltaic project, that would pretty much require us to take advantage, or the third party to take advantage of the tax credits. It would have to happen between now and December. As we've discussed it as staff, to take a look at something that really consists of a $10 million project of creating photovoltaic cells in a parking lot, of racing to make sure that we beat the timeline before December 08 to complete it, and what would happen if a party we engaged in discovered that they couldn't fulfill the contract and walked away from it. Our concern is that we may have put the district in some kind of jeopardy that isn't prudent at this time. We have to sort of entertain the notion of looking at the future to say that in December of 08, the feasibility of harnessing solar power for public agency will never exist again. It's a proposition that's a little bit difficult to really wrap our minds around, that there will be no other opportunity that would make photovoltaic energy possible. As Brad pointed out, the savings for the first 2.5 decades of this would be really pretty minimal. The major gain of the project would be the environmental, the green value of the project itself. We bring this forward not so much with as a...
Thank you. Walt, then Mark, then Adrian.
I'll wait till after our speaker.
Okay. Thank you. First of all, Brad, on table on the page 3.3, is that Greek? Because it looks like Greek to me. And I think, I'm not sure. If only my father were alive.
There's better tax credits in Greece.
And I guess one of the things that just really surprised me about this is why these separate parking lot shade structures? What's wrong with the roofs?
Roofs would seem to be the obvious choice. They are, however, subject to structural evaluation and approval by the Division of City Architect. And typically, if the total mass of an addition to a building exceeds 5% of the mass of the building, then they require full rotational analysis of structural, et cetera, et cetera. And it can be done.
Just may not be able to be done by December 08.
Well, I think generally what happens and what you see is that there, some roofs are much more adaptable to it than others. And some those both structurally and position-wise, as well as clear space. Two of the firms are looking at either roofs and parking lot or waiting area shade structures, both, or just the shade structures. So, you know, I think it's a mix and match and what makes the most sense economically and structurally.
And for some of our schools, don't we have potential issues with the coastal
front? They don't change the view line, et cetera. In the coastal zone, we're not necessarily the lead agency in making a secret determination. So the county would be, or the city of Morro Bay, would potentially be the lead agency, and we would have to go through whatever hoops they felt were appropriate. In my research, other cities and other public agencies have done negative declarations, and in a lot of cases, public agencies have done no CEQA on it, which I don't think is appropriate.
Okay. And I was surprised by the payoff, too. And I guess that's the extent of my questions. I was surprised that there's no model that allows us to mm-hmm. have it built and manage our own system.
Well, we could, but...
The disincentive is we don't get the tax benefits
right.
under the current law.
Now, there's a possibility that we structured a lease purchase, and so it was actually owned by a private party. They could realize the benefits, but we would then be committing to purchasing the whole array. A lot of these formats, when they run out to their 20 or 25 years, frequently we have a lease purchase opportunity at that point in time to purchase the system, which has been fully depreciated, all the tax credits have been realized, all the financing has been taken care of, and yet the system has tens, if not 20s, of years more life mm-hmm. at a slightly reduced rate. I mean, it does taper off, but...
Is that we can move forward with this? But I think it's really important for public agencies, especially an educational agency, to sort of set the tone, set an example for the community. And it's really, really my hope that we can move forward with this. So... I don't know what we can do as the board to make that happen, but if it's at all humanly possible to get this done between now, it's my understanding what you're saying is it has to be complete by December?
As it stands today, yes, unless there's an extension.
Okay, so it's not, you can't apply for the funding, start no. construction. You have to be finished with it.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Catherine?
Brad, I was just wondering if you could explain why on page 3.2 the savings is so much greater or appears to be so much greater with solar power partners than with the Chevron Energy project.
Part of it is these are the preliminary feasibility studies. They have benefits of all of our electric meters, our usage histories for a year, our addresses. They Google Earth. They check the solar zone that we're in. Solar zone is a 40-kilometer area. And a lot of you would probably say that the weather is significantly different in Morro Bay than it is in San Luis, than it is in Los Osos. And I'm not sure that every firm's engineering model took that into full account. So you may have had a firm that said, look, this is what this looks like. we can put this much solar area out. This is they usually target about 75% of your electric use. It would have worked. I mean, they're spending a lot of time at each and every site with their instruments. They're getting a little bit more specific, or when you rephrase it, a lot more specific on a site-by-site basis. So you're looking at very broad brush now, and what we would ultimately end up with would look different.
Chris?
Yeah, I think that we should move forward on solar voltaic. I feel like we're getting the bums rush, though, if I may put it that way. I think being able to get things, the permits anyway, in going through this DSA, for example, I don't know how we could do that unless Chevron's got some grease that we don't know about and get everything done by December. I must say I'm disappointed in the Congress, especially the Senate, by not being able to pass an extension of the tax credits. And I would think that there are plenty of companies that have enough invested in this that they would be putting the squeeze on the Congress to get them extended. I agree with Mark that I think that we have an obligation to set an example for the community, but I'm not convinced that we'll be able to have this done in a way that, as the staff suggests, is timely or protects the district by December. And with just one corporation offering to do this for us, I would be uncomfortable moving on it right now, although I think that we should continue to examine it, and hopefully things will get changed.
Adrian?
I've always been curious why Chevron Energy, for also known as NECA, I guess, and International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and together they have this project and they do install solar energy. And they come to CSBA, and I talked to the guy who's mentioned on here as their business development director today after school, Mr. Tom Martinez. And he talked about, he said, by the way, did you notice that the little building at CSBA? I'm not sure I looked at it, but he said at the top of that was a new iCell, which is an energy storage unit, which is about a cigar box size thing, so that maybe fewer panels and they can actually store energy, so it's not all just use it right now or else it goes back on the grid. So that's potentially more savings. They do free estimates for projects and are willing to come out and work with your school district and not charge you. So it seems like, why not? I mean, have them come over and see what they say and, you know, what they recommend. And they're not an oil company with an offshoot. And I don't, you know, Chevron has, to me, the reputation of being really good at ripping off customers, whereas I'm not sure the National Electrical Contractors Association has that same reputation. So I would be interested in looking at what they would suggest.
I'd be happy to contact them.
Pardon me?
I'd be happy to contact them.
I think that'd be great. And we have a packet for you, too. I also asked him about the... they mentioned on the second part of financing your project that you can use power purchase agreements, but that's not your only option. And when I remember talking to the woman, if you borrowed money, I don't know what the amount would be, and it sounds like it would be high. But after, you know, eventually you're making the payments on that with all the savings on your energy savings. So it seems like it would pay for itself faster. But I would just like to look at all the other financing options, that the PPA plus, you know, whatever else they come up with as part of their report and, you know, design report for us. This guy thought that it was very likely that there would be a green energy bill, an extension by December. He thought it was very likely in the current climate. And it seems like I would like to see us do some more. I would like to see us contact these guys, since it doesn't seem, I'm not that convinced that Chevron has the best thing for us. I don't trust them, I guess, as much. And just continue, like, getting our reports and our design, whatever, from all these people, and proceed as if we are going to just move with it when the time comes right away, and not just wait for December. I'm not that excited about Chevron's project, but I think we should contact these people and keep moving full speed ahead, because the savings, I think, is potentially very big. Plus, just for the environment, I mean, this one 900,000 kilowatt hours that they say with this one building saves 1.5 million pounds of CO2 in a year, plus nitrous oxide isn't given out, and sulfur oxide, dioxide, and I went all through that last time, but I think it's really important to lead the way, like Mark is saying.
Marilyn?
Well, Adrian, I just wanted to mention, I think if I understand it correctly, we're looking at the expense of the contractor in exchange for the tax credits that they would receive.
That's correct.
And we would receive the energy benefits.
We would realize some savings. All costs, all liabilities, all expenses, all approvals would be on the third party. That's the nature of the power purchase agreement.
Where with the IBEW or the NECA program, they represent contractors.
They have PPAs too. PPAs, same thing.
You know, then I guess perhaps I didn't understand, because I thought they represent contractors who will do an installation under contract to you for a price. It's a totally different way of approaching the installation.
They take care of that too. That you can have a PPA with them also, and they have investors lined up.
But you know what I was going to mention.
That's true.
What I was going to mention.
They are a labor force only.
But yeah, but they can help you with your.
What I was going to say, because of the conversation we're having tonight, there was a proposal from two entities that was presented, and there may be other options like you're suggesting. And I wanted to hear from the gentleman from the public.
Okay, but John, I hadn't quite finished with what I wanted to say to Brad, if you don't mind. Brad, if I'm understanding correctly, based on your experience previously through all of Measure A and what you've done here, what do you think the likelihood is of getting the necessary approvals from the county, the city, the Division of the State Architect, and whoever else might be involved within this time frame?
Maybe one of the best ways to answer is off and waiting.
Okay.
Chevron Energy, which is not a small player, I mean, they're a big company, they think they can do it. Got one company who's very experienced in multi-million-dollar projects who's saying their board of directors or their top management is saying, hold off, time frame's too short, the risk is too great. Got another one saying, we've got a window, we think we can do it if we move right now. So,
who's the third one you heard from?
Third one is called a company called Regenesis, and their analysis is strictly in San Luis Obispo, because they don't think that the solar numbers work for them in Los Osos or Morro Bay. Their installation is strictly rooftop, and they think that their system works, and their system is a tracking panel. So they think that they can actually make the numbers work, but we don't really have a full feasibility scope proposal from them yet to see just how big their project would be and what the numbers would look like. So, you know, we've got three different companies and three different opinions. A private company can move faster than a public agency if they can get the decisions they need from the public agency.
In a timely manner.
I'm nervous.
Yeah, I guess my question for you would be, is there a staff recommendation on this?
I think that as we put forward our concerns, you know, I think that the staff recommendation is probably, let's wait, let's continue our discussions with other firms, let's wait to make sure that we can deliver a project that doesn't disrupt to all of staff, but done the right way.
Okay. Thank you.
Questions, or should we have the member of the public who's been waiting? Mr. Aldrich, would you like to come up and address the board? There's a 3-minute time allocation for the public, because we need more time.
All right. Well, thank you for the opportunity. My name is Alex Aldrich. I work with REC Solar. Some of you might be familiar with REC. It's a local solar integrator, started 11 years ago in Los Osos. I was their 80th employee. We just hired our 275th, and that happened in 2 years. We worked with Brad about 4 to 6 months ago on this project. I think his analysis of it was airtight. We had the misfortune when Brad was looking in this project of having just been awarded, or the fortune, I suppose, six Costco wholesale location installations, which essentially absorbed all of our installation engineering manpower, two of which were in Hawaii, four in California, one of which is on Los Osos Valley Road. So we were unable to assemble a feasibility study as Chevron Energy Solutions and Solar Power Partners has. I was surprised to see what I read in this synopsis tonight, that they have been able to propose power purchase agreement numbers that seem to be cash flow positive in the first year. One way I'd like to distinguish what they do from what REC does, REC is an integrator. We have the installation manpower, the engineering resources, and the relationships with equipment manufacturers to install things. We don't do financing in-house. That's what Solar Power Partners and Chevron does. Chevron, those entities would find integrators like REC to subcontract to. It's up to their discretion. Energy also come to mind, but just consider that in your analysis. What else do I have? I certainly understand the time pressure that you're feeling to make a decision based on this, especially with a tax credit sunsetting. I do want to let you know that I have intimately involved with the tax credit, their passage or not. New legislation was brought forward last week. It depends on tax credits being taken away from oil and natural gas companies for renewable energy to get these tax credits, which doesn't make us very confident, so to speak. We have June and July set as the latest that we could possibly develop a project in fiscal year 2008. So while mid-February is late, we feel that we could get it done, a project of this scope, if we were to get the green light in June or July. For us to assemble a feasibility study, it would take 2 or 3 weeks from today. And if at all possible, we would still welcome the opportunity to assemble that for your review.
Okay,
that's all.
Thank you, Mr. Aldrich, very much. Are there any other questions for Brad? Walt?
I just want to make sure that we absolutely cannot participate in the current tax structure, tax credit structure.
As a public entity, you mean?
Right.
That's correct.
I guess, well, I understand that, but who knew? I just want to make sure that fundamental understanding was clear in my mind, because it kind of changes the finance picture a lot. The current comment that I want staff to do on this is probably something that should have been run through the planning process, the goal setting objective process, because our supreme duty is to educate children to an appropriate free public education when they show up at our door. That's our number one duty. Doing it as a good citizen is important, but I'm not sure I'm going to be caught up in a $24,000 payout on our electric bill while we rush into something that may or may not work out because we have a view that we have to somehow be exemplary green citizens. Anyway, thank you.
I appreciated the comments by Mr. Aldrich. Thank you for coming. I agree with Brad about rushing into something in terms of what's proposed at this point in time from the two entities. I have this vision of a project started, and come December it's half done, and it's sitting in the parking lot, both as an obstruction and possibly a hazard and a risk factor for the school and our liability at that point. I totally support the idea of developing, though, alternative means of energy and looking at all aspects, including the savings it would provide the school and partnerships with other entities like Mr. Aldrich's company and others as we move forward. I don't see how we can do this with a company now and have it agreed upon with contracts and everything by December of 2008, but I wholeheartedly believe that this is something that we can do, and I think it is educational. I think the development of alternative energy is exactly the type of educational process that benefits the students.
Do a feasibility study in 3 weeks.
Sure.
Perhaps we could have that in time for the March 19th?
Yeah, they were actually the first firm that I contacted many months ago. And as Mr. Aldridge mentioned, they were busy at the time. Mm-hmm. So, and we did contact another local firm, John Ewing's firm,
Pacific
Energy. And they referred us to Regenesis. I think that the scope of the project was probably something they thought was better handled by a larger firm.
If nothing else, I think it would just be helpful to have the subcontractor's view on how much it would actually cost. So
absolutely.
Would we look at the big picture? Thank you.
So it appears Adrian has a comment.
Yeah, I second John's comment and also Catherine's about local firms. And I like the idea of union labor. This one has a local chapter, too, of course. It's not L.A. we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And getting those different studies. I think we should scrap Chevron and go with these other and keep moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that was a point well taken about letting Chevron choose the contractors. I think that's a very risky notion. I think we should choose who builds, and some of them have some of them, like this company, this group does have provide help with financing. But we want good union people who know what they're doing, and local people is a great idea.
So there's a consensus from the board to have Brad continue to develop options and other proposals that can be brought back to be considered with appropriate parties. Is that
certainly
fine?
That's fine. I'll try to keep our fingers on the pulse of what...
Sure, in cooperation with the California Department of Education is designated the next time you meet, the middle of that week, March 3rd through 7th, as the week of the school administrator. And it's our recommendation that the board adopt a resolution in honor of that to encourage our community to acknowledge, honor, and thank the administrators during this week.
I'd like to move for resolution number 100708 as a school administrator. I appreciate any recognition that I can get, and certainly my fellow administrators are deserving of it.
Okay, well, ignoring the obvious, ignoring the
Mrs. Dickinson says I better abstain.
Ignoring the obvious conflict of interest, but appreciating the tenor of that motion, we have a motion made by Mr. Unger.
I do have a question.
Okay, and a second by
myself,
by Marilyn Rogers, and we have the open for discussion, Mr. Millar.
Thank you. Any word from Slo PD on whether the parade is going to be allowed this year or not?
I know you've asked that question
every
a couple
year,
of times, and no, I have not. I have not heard.
Okay, I still support the resolution. Are we going to read their resolution? Because we've read the other resolutions before.
Or should we ask Mr. Robinette to
read
the resolution? Mr. Robinette, would you please do the honor for Mr. Unger and the other fellow administrators here that are present?
Yeah, absolutely. A proclamation designating March 3rd through 7th, 2008 as Week of the School Administrator. Whereas leadership matters for California's public education system and the more than 6 million students it serves. And whereas school administrators are passionate, lifelong learners who believe in the value of quality public education. And whereas the title school administrator is a broad term used to define many education leadership posts, superintendent, assistant superintendents, directors, assistant directors, principals, assistant principals, deans, and supervisors. And whereas providing quality service for student success is paramount for the profession. And whereas most school administrators began their careers as teachers, the average administrator has served in public education for more than a decade. Most of California superintendents have served in education for more than 20 years. Such experience is beneficial in their work to effectively and efficiently lead public education and improve student achievement. And whereas school leaders depend on a network of support from school communities, fellow administrators, teachers, parents, students, businesses, community members, board trustees, colleges and universities, community and faith-based organizations, elected officials and district and county staff and resources to promote ongoing student achievement and school success. And whereas research shows great schools are led by great principals and great districts are led by great superintendents, these site leaders are supported by extensive administrative networks throughout the state. And whereas the state of California has declared the first full week of March as the week of the school administrator in Education Code 44015.1, And whereas the future of California's public education system depends upon the quality of its leadership, now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Trustees of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District proclaims March 3rd through 7th, 2008, as Week of the School Administrator and encourages all citizens to participate in observance to express their appreciation.
Thank you very much. And before we do the roll call, and we have a comment from Mr. Buckman.
If I can, having worked at the Association of California School Administrators, it is always good to remember that the state of California has the highest ratio of students to administrators in the country, and the state of California is also the only state that has a law limiting the number of administrators in a school district. And so we often hear things about that.
Maybe I should put that in next year's resolution.
Any other comments or questions before we take the roll call vote? Seeing none, Ms. Holmes?
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mrs. Dickinson?
Aye.
Mr. Spadafore?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Dr. Eisenrath Rogers?
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much, Rick.
Thank you.
I don't think so. This was the gift. Okay. We're going on to the action discussion portion of the agenda. And the first item, number 5, is completion of ballot for our CSBA delegate in their assembly. And this is going to be presented by Dr. Valentine.
Yes, I'd like to make a slight change for the board's information. We have an opportunity, the board does tonight, to vote for our regional CSBA delegate. Our board took action some time back to nominate our own Mark Buckman for the position of CSBA delegate. At the time, we anticipated that there would be one vacancy, and however many candidates might come forward for that one vacancy, the board could vote for one candidate. At this point in time, it appears that there are two vacancies that are available. One, due to vacating the delegate's position by our own Chris Unger, who has become a director, a CSBA director, and that's vacancy number one. And the second is due to the retirement of another CSBA delegate from that position. What we would like to ask the board to do, while we have the opportunity to check whether, in fact, there are one or two vacancies and whether the board can vote for one or two candidates, is to designate the board's candidate in the event that there is one, and to designate the board's candidates in the event that there are two. If that makes sense, or we can clarify as you go.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Valentine. Chris?
I haven't been notified of Mrs. Duggar's resignation. I believe that what we can do is vote for one of these, and then I believe the director of Region 9 is then required to appoint another director in the interim. So I think we can talk about our preferences, vote for one, but talk about our preferences for two, and then trust that your director will make a good choice if it turns out that Mrs. Duggar is not going to be running. So
Chris, are you saying that the action the board will take tonight is to, we have a question?
The confusion is probably an error on my part in not double checking some of this, but when I wrote this agenda item, my recollection was that these terms are staggered every 2 years.
Yes.
And the last time we held an election, it was for your seat.
No. My seat is up this year. The last time we had the election, it would have been Mrs. Duggar, and that's when Mr. Millar was interested in.
Okay.
That's when Mr. Millar ran.
So
that was 2006.
This is my oversight. My error, I was not remembering correctly, and I was thinking that Mrs. Duggar's seat was the one that was up.
No, so it's my seat that's
so
up.
So it's true that it's yours, and the ballot as presented in the packet by CSBA indicates that there's only one vacancy available.
That would be correct. That's my understanding, and then again, if Mrs. Duggar, if once we get notification of that, then an appointment would be made.
So looking at the agenda item, we're back to the point as presented that the board tonight will take action voting for a delegate of our choice to Region 9C. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. Do I have any motions? Go for it, Chris.
Nominate Tammy Gunn.
She's a very nice lady.
She is indeed.
Is that a motion? I think without the microphone on, it goes into the nether sphere.
It gives me great pleasure to nominate Mark Buckman as our candidate for the CSBA post.
Second. We have a motion by Mr. Millar to nominate Mark Buckman and a second by Ms. Dickinson. Any comments, both real and surreal? Catherine?
I have it on good authority that Tammy Gunther is casting her vote for Mark as well.
Oh, okay. Superdelegates have weighed in. We have a motion, and then Marilyn, did you do the second?
No, it was Adrian.
No, it was
Adrian did the second. Thank you. And all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And we have an abstention by Mark. It passes 6-0 with one abstention. We move on.
Thank you, Walton.
You're welcome, Mark. We're going to move on to the action consent items. Please indicate which item, if any, that you wish to be pulled for further discussion. Item number 7, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item number 8, acceptance of donations. Item number 9, disposition of surplus property. Item number 10, approval of furniture and equipment requests. We have a pull. Item number 11, approval of purchase orders. Do I have a motion from someone on the board to approve 7, 8, 9, and 11?
I'll make the motion.
Mark, and a second?
I'll second.
Marilyn, seconds. All in favor of approving 7, 8, 9, and 11, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0. Now we have a pull by Mr. Millar on number 10.
Thank you. Is Brad still here? Or Russell's here. I was just curious about the front loader and the dovetail trailer and the hydraulic utility trailer, and just wondering what those are related to. And
it's a grounds maintenance piece of equipment. They are basically for maintenance of our athletic fields and playgrounds. The front loader obviously has numerous uses depending on the tool that you put on the back. Excuse me. The main purpose of which is to get a deep aeration system going so that we can aerate our turf pieces and make them healthier.
Have we previously owned these pieces of equipment or particularly the front loader?
We have had a tractor. It is no longer functioning. That's a front loader. We have not had the other pieces of equipment attached to it that we're buying in this. We got a package deal, and the savings on the tractor is paying for the deep aerator.
Okay. I just thought about this a lot because I remember a letter to the editor sometime last year that was sort of accusing Brad Parker of creating a lawn mowing empire. I knew there were good reasons why we had these requests in here. And thank you for the information. I move approval of item, don't tell me.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I had a question.
I'll let you do that too for a second. Oh, on number 10?
Yes.
Okay, we have another question before we do the second. Sorry.
I had noticed item 3 on number 10, an interactive whiteboard, a smart board, destined for San Luis High School, and the it appears to be funded through a Teach Foundation grant in the amount of $1,115. And I thought that my memory of the Teach grants was that they were $250 or $300 limit. And I might be wrong about that. I just wondered if anybody could give me clarification.
Dr. Valentine?
Well, I'm not aware of the limit. I wasn't aware of a $250 limit, and I'm not sure whether there is a ceiling on it. My sense was they were granting up to about $1,000, and this is in that range.
Okay.
It doesn't look like it's paid for by Teach, but maybe it's being used by them.
Teach Foundation.
They're using, it's paid for by them.
It's being paid for by Teach. That's the clarification.
Okay.
Is that what you're looking for?
I just wondered if there was a, you know, a ceiling on each of their grants, or we don't know. Okay. Well, wonderful that we got that and that Mr. Melton will be receiving his smart interactive whiteboard. So with my question sort of semi-answered, I'll move approval. I'll second.
Second it. We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Ms. Rogers on item number 10. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Now we're in the advanced agenda section, and I'll open it to the board for discussion on that item. Mr. Unger?
There was a request, I believe, to clarify my request and Mr. Buckman's request on the accountability for PE exemptions. And my intent in bringing this issue back to the board was not to question the exemptions themselves, but to have a discussion on what sorts of accountability measures could be in place for our athletes. I believe we have it. We owe it to our athletes to assure that they're as physically fit as other students, which is one of the points that was made by the number of parents that were here. Also, I believe that we had a number of PE teachers that were here during the first discussion of it. And one of the things that they talked specifically about was concern about the PE standards. And so although I'm not opposed to the exemption, I do believe that we need to discuss what we can do to assure the physical fitness of our athletes. And that's what I would like to have this discussion be about. And that's what I would ask be brought back by the administration.
Okay, I think Mr. Millar has a comment also.
I can support that. I didn't see the need to bring back the PE exemption discussion all over again, and one of the reasons I was less than accommodating to the however we should have handled the pending motion last time was because I think there are more elegant, straightforward ways to deal with what I believe, and you and Mr. Buckman, correct me if I'm wrong, is a relatively minor concern that there may be some interscholastic athletes that somehow can't pass the fitness gram requirement. If that's more than five, I would be shocked. We have a chess team that plays interscholastically. I believe that this could be addressed through an administrative regulation that put the responsibility on the interscholastic team coaches to make a determination whether or not these athletes can pass the fitness gram. And that was the reason I thought we needed closure on the PE exemption issue. There were a lot of folks waiting for a final answer so they could do some planning for things. And I just feel like we could accommodate the concern, which I believe is valid, but we can accommodate it in a more elegant manner.
Go to Mark, then Adrian.
Yeah. I have to agree with Walt, and as I said at the last meeting, I don't think there's anybody at this table that's opposed at this point to the exemptions. But I have to agree with Chris that the athletes benefit greatly from being athletes, and to have some accountability, I think is valuable.
Adrian,
I was just wondering if this is going to be very narrow in terms of the athletes have to take the physical fitness test and pass, and that's all we're going to talk about, or are we going to talk about some of the other things that are benefits of PE being included in athletic programs, or something that would be coaches, like coaches being accountable for, as well as just individuals? Or is it gonna be, how narrow is it?
My intention with this item was to require that the school district actually have some sort of accountability for the physical fitness of its students. And I am comfortable with the administration bringing back recommendations, which could be things like passing parts of the fitness gram. It could be things like assuring that there's an alignment of state standards with the athletics program for whatever it is that their sport they're playing. So I'm agreeing with you, Walter, that I'm not here to determine what that looks like, but I would like to hear some suggestions for that. And again, accountability, I believe that for the school and for the teachers and the coaches to make sure that their students have the opportunity to be physically fit and to demonstrate that physical fitness.
Does that, and I think we have the support of at least two board members to go forward, does that is that clear enough, Dr. Valentine? Okay. Thank you, Chris, Mark, Walt, Adrian. Any other advanced agenda items that would, Adrian?
This isn't for advanced agenda, just Friday report packet. I did read Charlie's letter, and I'm curious about how the benchmark assessments are going in terms of teacher response and just in general.
So you're asking for that to be in a Friday packet?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Got that? Okay, sounds good. Any other requests? Seeing none, I believe that this meeting has run its due course, and we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. We're moving to the door.